Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Ken Kratzer for CBSI Services, Talking Business, another episode of CBSI Talking Business. And we are in the middle, hopefully we're in the middle, of the coronavirus situation, epidemic, pandemic, and very much interested and look forward to talking to our good friend Ruth Stevens, who is a author and business-to-business marketing consultant, author, educator, and adjunct professor at the NYU Stern School. She has also taught at Columbia University in their business school, has the organization E-Marketing Strategy. And sort of waiting for Ruth to join us. I think she is just on the line. And this is Ken Kratzer with CBSI Services Talking Business. Is this Ruth?
Yes, it is.
Hey, good afternoon, and thank you for calling in and joining us today.
Thank you, Ken. I'm delighted to be with you.
Our pleasure. Now, how are you? Now, you are in Midtown Manhattan. How is Manhattan holding up to this closing down of non-essential business in New York State and much of the region? How is New York City handling it?
Well, we're all hanging on the daily words of Governor Cuomo, who's shown extraordinary leadership by keeping us all informed and also going to bat on behalf of New York, trying to get more resources and support from the federal government, and also exhorting people to follow the new rules. I think he gave us a lot of inspiration today when he said New Yorkers are tough and New Yorkers are smart, and he encouraged us all to be brave and do our part. So I'm pretty impressed with his leadership, but also really concerned for our city because we don't have enough medical support. We don't have enough ventilators. We don't have enough beds compared to the apparent levels of disease and victims that are currently projected to be expected. So it's a really mixed situation here.
Yes, it's very concerning as to what the next couple of weeks, next 45 days will bring. I talked to Elliot Engel, the congressman from New York City, who talked about this, the peak not being for until around the beginning of May. And obviously, Governor Cuomo has done a terrific job of describing to citizens of New York and around the country, around the world who are listening in about the seriousness of this situation. Now, Ruth, you're an expert. We were talking a little bit in your intro in business-to-business marketing, and you know a lot about supply chains, and you've taught overseas in places like China and even Vietnam recently. What has happened to the supply chain that medical supplies have become such a limited quantity when an emergency might come up?
As I understand it, it's similar to the toilet paper issue that we consumers have been both frustrated by and sort of laughing about as well. And it's because most business supply chains are on regular schedules that are set up according to estimated demand. And when the demand is unusually high, the supply chains are not going to work according to the plans that have been put in place. And extra measures need to be taken, and that takes time. So either you recognize the very sudden changes in demand and go work with your suppliers to try to get more. And that's, of course, what any business person would do, but the manufacturers in question may not have their supply chains as stable as they would like, and they can't get what they need to build 40,000 ventilators, for example. So it is a fact of business life today. That said, though, there is an extra piece of complexity in that business manufacturing, business buying is a complex and long process. So if an urgent demand arises, it can take time to move the supply chain faster, much faster than many consumer products. So it's kind of a double whammy.
Sure. We heard that 3M was going to try to augment one of their production facilities to make some of the protective gear that is not so different from what they do normally. But the thing like ventilators, you were saying, is got so many different parts, and it's a complex instrument that it's not easy to get all the components to it. Is there any advice you'd have to some people have said this is not so different from what happened in World War II when the economy had to change to making military equipment from things like cars, and there is a law that the president could fall back on to use. But is there any key advice you would have on how to change a business to business, a business that would be making similar devices to ventilators and be able to increase their capacity for production very quickly?
Yes, it requires two things. One is speed, and that's sort of a corollary would be leadership, meaning early recognition and willingness to take the risk of reaching out and putting in those fresh orders and working with your suppliers to get them moving and providing any capital that's needed or terms or whatever can help motivate them to drop everything and serve your needs. And then the other piece is relationships, meaning most businesses value deep, trust-based relationships with their suppliers. So companies that have built strong relationships based on the trust that the supplier will deliver on time and will behave reasonably and will serve your needs, and those kinds of capabilities are built up over time. Fortunately, business buyers and business suppliers both value long-term relationships. So, because it makes life easier and business run more smoothly. So it's not surprising that most businesses go to great lengths to build and sustain relationships of trust with their suppliers. So those would be the two areas that I think are important for businesses to focus on.
Yeah, and certainly knowing who's got extra capacity, who can ramp up quickly for an emergency, and so those are what the federal government and the states need to do. It's interesting. FEMA has been given a key role now and seems to be in charge of procurement. So they seem to be a knowledgeable organization, not so different from the military, and being able to be experts in logistics. So we're going to hope that they're able to handle the need to find this protective equipment and ventilators to help our hospitals out and their patients.
And I'm glad you brought up the point that someone else had made, that this is starting to feel like war. I've heard that term a number of times over the last week, and it really seems appropriate.
Well, it's just I've read so much about what was done in World War II to convert factories, from making cars into airplanes. And also, there's always a famous story amongst aviators about the P-51 Mustang, which was considered to be the best propeller-driven fighter plane ever built, that they designed it and got it to its first test flight in a matter of months. You know, now it took 10 years to get the F-35, I think, to do its first flight. So that's what we need, as you said, speed and relationships, understanding where capacity can be found. Now, Ruth, you know, I mentioned in our intro, as you were calling in, that you have taught around the world in recent years in Hong Kong, in India, in China, and in Europe. What are you hearing from your friends at the different schools around the world about how they're faring with this coronavirus?
Well, my friends in India have had their campus closed within the last week, and now I'm hearing today that India, and that, excuse me, I should mention that that's in Bangalore, one of the cities that was hit earliest with virus victims. And I heard today that all of India is going into some level of lockdown. I'm not exactly sure what, but that it seems, I would infer that that means it's spreading quickly to other cities. So with the campus closed, I'm not really sure whether the Indian Institute of Management is conducting classes or not. They just had their graduation last week for the MBA program, so they may all be on a term break right now. I'm not exactly sure. And other countries I haven't actually heard from in detail, other than Hong Kong, which was an early infection venue, so we all know what they've been through. And they've actually been doing pretty well at maintaining levels. I think what's unusual about this outbreak is because of the asymptomatic carrier angle to this, it's allowed a certain amount of complacency around the world, and as it spreads sort of quietly and silently, and then with great fanfare, I and my friends were being pretty complacent just a couple of weeks ago. So I think we're all guilty of underestimating what it meant for us personally and for our locality.
Well, certainly, I think we all never thought we'd have a situation like this where we have a lockdown for non-essential American businesses, and certainly shutting down much of New York City is unprecedented. Even with 9/11, it was something that after a few days we kind of knew what the situation was and could tend to those affected and start to rebuild. But this, we're not quite sure what's going to happen. Let me ask you about one of the questions that I think every company is looking at is their communication strategy during a crisis period like this. I was on one conference call last week which said drop everything that's routine and only talk about how your company is helping its customers, employees, its communities through this. What are you recommending to your clients and companies about what their communication strategy should be during this crisis?
It's really hard to say. I think business leaders need to use their best judgment according to their place in the minds of their customers. I, as an individual, have started to get a little sick of seeing emails from companies that I know next to nothing about but might have had some random contact with years ago, sending me emails crowing about their concern for their customers. And it's almost become hackneyed, even just 2 weeks into this crisis. So I think the best advice that I could give is to follow the nature of your brand in connection with what your customers may expect to hear from you and appreciate hearing from you. To me, the other question that you might ask or we might discuss is, how should we as individual white-collar workers, because, you know, all of us who are working at home are pretty much white-collar type, how should we be conducting our business communications? It's really awkward to be talking about business to a customer or prospect or a supplier or anybody in our business circle when they may be in crisis in their own lives, and it's difficult to determine how, to what extent our business activities are even relevant to the people that we're usually in touch with. Most people today are opening with a hope you're well, hope you're safe, best wishes to you and your family kind of messaging. But it's certainly, I think, appropriate to make those kinds of niceties, to try to acknowledge that we're all in a strange time and difficult situation. But I also feel, without any data to back this up, I feel like there's a certain amount of comfort to be had in continuing to move the business forward and bringing up business topics and trying to keep things going as best we can, same as we would do in any crisis, try to keep a good face on things and in a sensitive way, try to keep things moving.
Well, certainly normalcy helps, and certainly talking to colleagues, customers, and even prospects certainly helps keep those business relationships fresh and as a source of comfort. Now, one industry that we work in quite closely at CDSI are contact centers, supporting a lot of our bank projects. There's a lot of strain on contact centers now to try to handle increased volume. While we talked to a contact center executive last week, he said the industry is shifting from working in a facility to working at home. And not every organization was set up to do that. How do you see the contact centers handling the volume that they're picking up during this period?
Well, they are being forced to broaden the work rules, basically, and there's plenty of software around to support that. Some of the larger contact center users have been operating that way for years. Remember when JetBlue opened up in New York, Ken, and 100% of their call center agents were, if not part-time, then maybe full-time workers at home. And that model seems to work well if the tools are available for both sides. So I think it's a trend that I'm actually hearing from a number of people these last couple of weeks that some of the business practices that we're adopting on an emergency basis to deal with this crisis are very likely to stick around if they prove themselves and become the new normal when things get back to the old normal in our business lives, God willing.
Well, I think you're right. I think this situation is going to change the way a lot of companies operate, having to plan more contingencies, planning for more crisis situations. One of the companies that I think their business model is being proven out are those who are cloud computing organizations, especially in contact centers, because they've been saying for years, well, if you keep the software on the cloud, And then you can set up any number of representatives at whatever locations to work off of that system. So this is,
absolutely.
And also then the data center would be in the cloud and not in the facility. I guess that is that one of the things that you see has been very helpful in this kind of period is cloud computing capability?
Certainly. It's the fastest growing segment of the software industry and just irresistibly alluring to business managers who are thrilled to be able to outsource so much of their IT and let somebody else handle it. It reduces risk, it reduces expense, and it helps them free up management time to focus on their core values value propositions versus less strategic capabilities. So it's definitely been a trend for about 15 years now and is going nowhere but up.
Certainly. One of the concerns I have is how small businesses are handling and able to get through the situation. We see so many restaurants and retail stores that have gone through various situations, from limiting the number of customers who can be in the store to restaurants that just do takeout now. And I feel like some are in a better position because they, in the past, had developed relationships with their customers so they could get a message out to them either through email or through Facebook or another social media platform. But they had a way to engage with their customer base about how they can continue to do business with them. What are some of the ways that, you know, you'd like to see or would advise small businesses, even, you know, some of the storefront ones or so many in Manhattan or where we are in White Plains, what's some of the advice you'd have for small businesses to try and stay in touch with their customers through this period?
It's been a perennial subject in the world of database marketing, Ken, where you and I have both had a lot of experience. At the retail level, how do you de-anonymize the relationship with a face-to-face customer who comes by your store, transacts, and leaves? And retailers have for years done things to try to get a hold of their contact information. Originally, one of the ideas was to capture their phone number at checkout. I remember a couple of telecom companies trying that, Radio Shack, for example. And the other method that has been used in the past was data matchback of the credit card until the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act put that practice out of business due to consumer concerns that they didn't want their credit, their names and addresses to be revealed to the retailers. But the single most successful over time method has been the loyalty card, where retailers
sure.
have instituted a kind of bribery system to motivate customers to give up their contact information and agree to receive messaging in exchange for some kind of discount. And not usually you can't expect to get even 85% of your customers. The sign-up rates are closer to 50%, if that, but it certainly allows the retailer to do what you were describing, namely build a ongoing marketing communications system with their customers.
Sure. I've been suggesting to some local businesses that they, every day they put a photo on their Facebook page of just an item they may have served or just to show the store being busy and to give what their business hours are and their situation. A lot of businesses have closed this week, but even the restaurants are doing takeouts. I saw one example that a company had set up one business kind of for serving breakfast, one for serving lunch, and one for serving dinner. And it gave them a way to have communication points on that. Now, Ruth, I just thought maybe we'd just talk for a second. We had the pleasure of talking with Ruth Stevens, who is a business-to-business marketing expert on an international level, teaches at NYU, past president of the Direct Marketing Club of New York. And Ruth, I thought maybe we'd just go through some of the verticals that are affected. What's your thought for the airline and transportation industry that's so badly affected? I mean, it's amazing how much the airline business has shut down. It's a fraction of the number of flights that would be going on a normal day. What kind of communications message should the airlines be offering to their customer base?
Well, they are in such a it's a terrible position now, but they have the great advantage of being a category that is in high demand in our global world. And they've been able to maintain price levels that are still attractive to consumers and business people. So it's my estimate that after this crisis runs its course, that the airline business will come back, maybe not to quite the levels that they've been enjoying in these last several years, but certainly to profitability. I do worry about the cruise lines, though. I think their category will be slower to recover. I think the emotional connection with the cruise line that cruisers have enjoyed has been tainted, frankly, by stories about ships that had infected passengers being treated so badly by ports and so forth. And that's a vivid memory that is going to take a while to fade. People recognize that once you get on a ship, your options are limited. So
yeah,
I think that'll be slower. Were there other industries that you wanted?
Well,
to
how about I always
consider?
Like to ask about our segment in the payments industry, credit card business. Banks and issuers are trying to respond to customer needs. Sometimes it's about cancellation of flights. Sometimes it's about other questions. Is there anything that stands out to you about what the banks should be trying to do to help their customers through this very difficult time?
Well, probably the most obvious opportunity is to be more lenient with customers who have lost their jobs or otherwise had their incomes reduced during the crisis, if that means payment terms that are more generous. I know that mortgage bankers have already started working on ways to help customers who are at risk of being unable to make their payments. So I'm very encouraged by that level of generosity and understanding that this is not a good time to be harsh with people who have credit problems. So I expect that kind of trend will be irresistibly attractive to banks in this crisis.
And certainly a way for the savings and loan industry to increase their competitive level against and their relationships they have with versus some of the larger institutions. And Ruth, one thing I just ask you about before we break is the other side of it is the online retail industry. Seems like it's having a Thanksgiving weekend every day during this period as people are home and they're going online. Yeah. They're ordering things from Amazon and other vendors, because they can't go to a retail store. How do those companies position themselves during this period. Obviously, they're trying to be helpful, but this could end up being another growth spurt for online businesses.
Yes, I think it's an enormous advantage for them. I'm encouraged to see ordinary retailers ramp up their delivery capabilities to serve customers, but the e-commerce players are clearly taking advantage of this opportunity. I hope, I feel quite astonished at how rapidly e-commerce has taken hold in our society and in others. I see it in Europe and Asia as well. Because when I entered the mail order business in the early 90s, only about 3% of retail sales were done remotely. And now it's closer to 25%. That's a remarkable shift in consumer behavior and in people's willingness to take the risk of ordering something and having it not be to their liking. So I applaud the e-commerce vendors and their ability to reduce the friction and make it easier to return and doing a better job of explaining the benefits and the features of their products so that consumer expectations are closer to the reality of what they're going to get. So it's really a category that I think deserves every success they've managed to generate in the recent decades and are going to be very, very big beneficiaries of the continued changes in consumer behavior.
Sure.
As a result of this crisis.
And, you know, it couldn't have come at a worse time for chain retailers like Macy's, who have been struggling, talking about closing stores. And you wonder how what they're going to be like 2 months from now if they have to stay closed during this period. Hey, Ruth, do you have it's Ruth Stevens. We're so glad to have a chance to chat with you today and hear your expertise on business-to-business marketing from both the international and local perspective. Do you have a final thought, piece of advice you'd offer to clients or to businesses about communications, contact center management, what the kind of delivery things that they're going to need to do to get through this crisis period?
Thank you. Yes, when it comes to communicating with customers and prospects these days, the secret to success, I think, is authenticity, that we need to be clear in the words that we use to express our sincerity and the difficulties that we know they are having and that we are having, and be true to the nature of our brands. But on a personal level, I would also say, we'll get through this. Let's keep our chins up and keep pushing forward. So I wish
and
you and your
people.
Family the best.
Well, thank you. We think of those people, all the emergency service workers in hospitals and EMTs, and actually people out there doing deliveries. I see the Postal Service workers up and down our street with their trucks. Even on Sunday, they were out delivering. And police and firemen, we always want to give a shout-out to those heroes that make such a big difference. I was thinking about them the other night when it was cold and rainy last night, and I went out to get a coffee around the corner, but I knew there were police and firemen working right up and down the street, having to be out in the bad weather. So we always think of them and say thank you. And so, Ruth Stevens, I look forward to doing this again. Hopefully by the time we do it again, we're back beyond this crisis period and the business is a little bit back close to normal. But thank you again for the chance to hear your expertise on business-to-business marketing. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Ken. Best wishes.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. This is Ken Kratzer for CBSI Services Talking Business today from the home office in White Plains, New York. This is Ken Kratzer. Have a great day, everybody, and stay safe.